fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
This is Part-Time Fanboy, and I'm Christian Horn. I'm here with Paul Edwards, and we are recovering from Comic-Con.
Yes, we are on a Comic-Con recovery.
Oh my God. It's been a week since we returned, and I'm still tired. I don't know about you.
No, I was. I pretty much hit the ground running as soon as I came home, and I've been all right.
Oh, you're all right now?
Yep.
No, I'm still recovering.
Well, I didn't have to, you know, take care of a daughter for, you know, 4 days by myself.
Yeah. Well, my wife went out of town, and so I was Mr. Mom for like 3 or 4 days right after Comic-Con. Although I did take the Monday off when I got back, and I actually got a post Comic-Con massage, so that kind of helped, but still I was just kind of running around. So what did you think, Paul? Did you have a good time at Comic-Con?
I had a great time. Yeah, it's always fun, and you know, this year was no exception. It was a little quieter year altogether, I think.
Yeah, it seems like it. It seems like things were a little less chaotic up until like Sunday, at least. Yeah. The floor was. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you hear Miguel's thoughts?
No. Miguel from Dig Comics?
Yeah, he said that he thought that one of the reasons it was more sedate is because this is the first year without a Twilight movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh, that's interesting. So you think the Twilight made it that crazy?
I know that the Twilight panels were always really challenging to get into, and you know, like people would line up for days before the panels, and you know, so that I think he may have a little bit of a point there.
Wow. Because, well, I mean, I guess because a lot of the big halls were always filled, like, you know.
Yeah, but it's not quite the same fan base that the Twihards provide.
Yeah, that's true. But I guess my question sort of is, wasn't the Twilight stuff away from the convention center mostly? Like the screenings and stuff like that?
No, well, maybe the screenings and things like that. But, you know, they always had you know, Hall H reserved for the stars, and you know, all the, you know, I mean, they did quite a bit of promotion at Comic-Con.
Yeah, I guess for the past couple of years, huh? So I guess Ender's Game couldn't fulfill that void, that
no,
despite their giant whatever it was across the street. I didn't check it out.
Yeah, Ender's Game is a different story-wise, it appeals to different things. I think Ender's Game appeals to boys more than girls.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it doesn't... You're also dealing with kids in the movie that are a little younger than the Twilight kids. Uh-huh. And it's not, you know, it's not all angsty teen drama, you know? Yeah. the angsty teen drama-less year of Comic-Con made it feel a little calmer.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know, but I also think that the convention has quite literally taken over the city, you know, as opposed to just being focused on the con floor and on the panels, you know. Yeah. Inside the actual convention center. I mean, you know, they had that Godzilla experience, right?
Mm-hmm. Right outside there, and then there was Nerd HQ,
which I think this is like their third year of doing stuff.
That was what most people were talking about there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it definitely seems like that Nerd HQ is kind of, I don't know if they're getting bigger, but they're definitely kind of getting people in on their panels that, mm-hmm, people want to see. You know, it's not like just some fly by night, you know, half-assed, like little convention. I mean, we couldn't even get tickets to the Doctor Who panel at Nerd HQ.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
And then there's also the you know, other panels being put together by, you know, groups such as Tumblr. You know, we saw that amazing big line for the Doctor Who panel that what that was put together for. And then, you know, there's offsite things like what was the one we visited?
Trickster,
you know.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's more of a nighttime thing, sort of like post-con. But, you know, there are quite a few alternatives to just being on the floor now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at night, it just seems like there's a lot of other stuff going on. Like, there's a lot of, seem to be a lot of shows, like, you know, the Kevin Smith Hollywood Babylon podcast was doing stuff. Again, you had Trickster, which was like kind of like a bar slash like indie comic store thing. And then, you know, I think the Nerdist had a show going on in the evening, and a lot, some Comedy Central shows had stuff going on. So just the whole convention has just really turned into something else. I mean, I was actually talking to somebody about it today, and it's like the whole con has become like, it's an all-inclusive con. Like, nothing is left out. Whatever you're into, you can check out at San Diego. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Instead of having, like, the Star Trek con and the Doctor Who con and the comic book con, it's now everything. It's not just, like, one thing about comics, you know? Or just movies, you know? It's anything. I think there was even role playing stuff going on there, which I think happens every year. But
yeah, there is. It's been moved to a different sort of section of the con.
Oh, really?
Because over in the Marriott, there was a big section devoted to RPGs and you know, like magic tournaments and things like that. Also, they've moved a lot of their sort of film festival things off into, you know, into the Marriott right there next to it. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting. It's almost like you could sort of spend, you know, a bunch of time at each little section of the con, and it feels like it feels now like there's more than one convention going on there. So it's a bunch of conventions that run concurrently.
Yeah And it's interesting, I think, like, this year it definitely seemed like you and I both said, it's like we wandered into panels that we just thought we were never going to get into, which you know, I think that they were doubling content up through the weekend. I think that, like, Wednesday and Thursday, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on, a lot of different panels. So by the time we got there, like Friday, you know, to see certain pilots or you know, sit in on certain Q&As, like, there were no lines. You just, especially like Ballroom 20, we just kind of like waltzed right in, which I was stunned by. I mean, you know,
Hall H is still one of the circles of hell.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't be wrong about that, but Ballroom 20 was surprisingly accessible this year. You know, one of the things that was also I noticed this year, that they've moved a lot of sort of the bigger movie announcements and things up to Thursday. Thursday's sort of the new Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how packed it is, but that's probably like a smart thing for like the hardcore nerds who want to take like an extra day of work, you know, off to attend the convention, to reward them with some of the bigger announcements and stuff.
Plus, you know, you want to get a jump on everyone else in the news cycle.
That's true too. Yeah, that's true. I mean,
you know, if you get in your announcement on Thursday, you know, you're able to get into that week's news cycle before the weekend kicks in.
Yeah, that's true too. That's smart. Yeah, I mean, so it left a lot of room for us to, or at least me, to wander around the floor and check stuff out. And I didn't really feel all that crowded up until it was time to maybe leave the convention floor. You know what I mean? And then it would kind of like disrupt into chaos, like around like six or seven or so, where you were trying to get back across the street. But you know, I had a surprisingly mellow time at this con. The thing that I always forget is how easy it is to lose track of time. You know what I mean? Yes. Where you're like, oh, I'm gonna try and get to this thing. I'm gonna try and get to this thing. I'm trying to get to the other thing. And then before you know it, like before I knew it, like early Friday, there were a couple of things I wanted to check out, and just not calculating the time to walk there, and then oh, you get distracted by a stand or like an artist that you want to talk to or something, and then I just lost track of time. So by the time I would get to the first few things I wanted to check out, like either the line was too long or, you know, it had already started, you know.
Right. Yeah, so. that's one of my problems too, is I'm always forgetting the commute time. You know,
yeah.
Especially from one section of the con to another. You know, if you're looking at something that's going to be in the Sheraton or the Marriott, you have to allow pretty much an extra 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, just to get from one place to the other. Something that would normally take you, you know, 5 minutes to walk, you usually have to triple or quadruple that.
Yeah, it's funny because like one of the big things I think I missed on Friday was the Venture Brothers panel. And it's funny because I was walking over to the, is it the Marriott or the Sheraton? I can't remember.
Sheraton is to the south of the convention center. Marriott's to the north.
Yeah, so if you're walking towards the con, is that left or right? Because
Left is Sheraton, right is Marriott.
Yeah, where all the Teen Titans stuff was. The big Teen Titans balloons, which I totally geeked out over and absolutely loved.
There's the Sheraton.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So I'd been... It was really interesting experience, like the Venture Brothers thing, because I was walking over. And I was like, oh, this doesn't seem that crowded at all. And I remember the first time I went over to that hotel to see the Venture Brothers panel, I think 2 years ago, and I actually got in. And this year I was thinking, oh, maybe it's not so crowded, blah, 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 blah. And then it's like you get to the door and they're like, no, you got to go down the escalators and go outside to wait online. And as soon as I walked out, I was like, oh, bummer. Like there was no way I was getting into that panel. But then on the flip side, you know, I managed to get in on a Bruce Timm panel. Like the room was full, but I was able to get in on that. And then the one thing that I couldn't get in on was the Orphan Black panel, because they stuck it in like a tiny room, which is kind of insane to stick like one of Time magazine's top 15 shows in a tiny room like that. I don't think they were expecting it to get as packed as it was, because the line for that was out the door. But then it was like, let's go check out the Almost Human pilot, the new J.J. Abrams show on Fox. And I just wandered right in.
Yep.
I couldn't believe it.
And thanks for letting me know about that, because I wanted to see it. And
yeah, I know you did.
And that was one of my, I think, my convention highlights, is just being able to walk in and see a pilot that I was really interested in. And you know, and it being good.
Yeah.
Know, that was a nice bonus on top of it. But it was it was great to do that. I often wonder about that, you know, when they're sitting down to plan the event. And, you know, my hat's off to the people who do plan these things. But, you know, how do they sort of allot the rooms, you know? Because, I mean, the last panel that I attended on Sunday was Neil Gaiman, the sort of Comic-Con spotlight on Neil Gaiman.
Yeah.
Not on any of his other projects, but just sort of on the man and his work. And, you know, that was... I showed up, you know, two panels early to be able to get a seat for that. It was really packed and yeah. It was standing room only, and you know, they could have easily, it could have easily doubled, I think, the room, you know, the capacity.
Wow.
That they had allotted for that. So it's really sort of some things you look and you're like, wow, how can, you know, how can they fill, you know, a giant ballroom with, you know, or why do they give it to this and then something else that might seem like it needs, you know, needs a bigger ballroom just gets a tiny room. I can't explain it.
Yeah. Well, I
honestly have a feeling that the Orphan Black thing snuck up on them.
Yeah, I do too, but the thing is you would look around at stuff, and I mean The Walking Dead 10th anniversary, which wasn't for the TV show, but that wasn't in a very big room, and I was like, "Really? That's odd to me that they would stick that in there, you know, into such a small room, you know. I don't know. But I didn't get a chance to make it over to that panel. That was one of the ones where, like, time escaped me. But I also think that, you know, and I've been saying this for years, I don't think the San Diego Convention Center can hold the Comic-Con anymore. I mean, it's not large enough. You know, they need larger rooms. Like, Hall H and Ballroom 20 can't be the only super large rooms that you have. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I know that, you know, the six rooms, you know, the ones, excuse me, that go sort of down the middle.
Yeah.
You know, they can sort of repartition those. And, you know, those are generally pretty large rooms. But, you know, yeah, you know, the Neil Gaiman thing, I think, was in six E and F. You know, and yeah. I'm like, well, you know, you should have considered putting this one in the ABC.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's, again, that's part of Comic-Con is that, you know, you're just going to get shut out of some things, and other things, you know, you're going to get into, and it'll be a surprise. I was really surprised that we were able to get into the Joss Whedon panel.
Yeah, that's another one where we were just like, That was right. Oh, that was the one that was right after Orphan Black, where, like, we couldn't get into Orphan Black, and it's like, you want to go see if Joss Whedon, you know, is gonna, and then we were like, okay, and we walked over there, and it was wide open. We just grabbed a seat, and he was just starting his, like, question and answer session.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, talk about a guy that can work a crowd too. I mean,
yeah. Honestly, I got to see, that was for me another highlight, the fact that I got to see two of the best Q&A, you know, people working the convention. You know, Whedon is just spectacularly funny with a crowd, and he gives really great answers. And Neil Gaiman, also funny in a British way, and you know, really engaging with his fans too.
Which is
the best parts of Comic-Con.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, is like, you really, especially in the Joss Whedon panel, and I'm sure anybody who's like a huge fan of Joss Whedon kind of knows this, it's like you see these people coming up to the mic to ask questions, and you could see how much he appreciates, like, the affection that they have towards his work. You know what I'm saying? Like, he doesn't cut them down. He doesn't kind of, like, make any snide comments. He's not mean at all. You know, when you could see somebody easily, you know, taking some of these questions or looking at some of these people and just pulling, like, you know, like the William Shatner Saturday Night Live, you know, like, get a lot, you know, it's like he could easily do that, and he's just not that type of person. And I don't know about you, but I've sat in on panels where it's been like almost like painful to see people get up and ask questions and how badly some creators can treat their fans, you know.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I think I've seen improving in the years is the social skills and question asking abilities of the fans.
Yeah,
I feel like people have gotten a little better. They, you know, they do a good job of not asking questions that someone else has already asked. you know, not gushing too much, you know, although, you know, there's certainly going to be a little bit of that. Yeah, I think for the most part, people have kind of figured out the Q&A thing.
Yeah.
At least in these bigger ones. You know, there's still in the small panels, there can be the occasional off-topic person.
Yeah, I had a little bit of that experience in the Bruce Timm panel, which, again, I was shocked that I got into. And what was really funny is that Bruce Timm kind of started the whole thing out like, I'm not retiring, I'm not quitting, I'm not, you know, because there were all these rumors that, you know, why are you leaving animation and blah, 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 blah. You know, mm-hmm. He's just very much saying that, you know, he's just kind of doing something different right now. But one of the people that came up to ask a question was, I believe it was a woman from Taiwan. And, you know, she had a little, her English was very good. It was a little broken. But she said, you know, like, I came here to see you. You know what I mean? And she's like, I flew 17 hours. You know what I mean? And she starts asking questions, and it's like really sweet, but it's like she doesn't know kind of to stop at one. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you could see the crowd kind of like getting impatient with her. And there's a part of me that wanted to stand up and be like, dude, she flew 17 hours to talk to Bruce Timm. I mean, why don't we just pull up a chair for the woman, and after the thing, he can, you know, it's like, and the Comic-Con guy got like really like, okay, you've already asked enough questions, you know, now it's time to, and I was like, chill out, man. You know, it's like we're all here, we're here to appreciate him, and, you know, and this chick flew 17 hours from Taiwan or wherever it was. I mean, I it's funny because sometimes the crowd can be patient, and then other times they can just like turn on someone like that, you know. And I just felt like, oh, come on, give the girl a break.
I've seen it go both ways, and I'm really happy that for the most part, people are a little more chill, a little more mellow, a little more forgiving.
Yeah. And it what was also interesting to me is in the Bruce Timm panel and the George Perez panel, that's all it was really like question and answers. And so people would walk up, and then they would run out of people to ask questions. And then the same, like, you know, same people who had maybe asked questions before would just like, you know, go around back to the mic and start asking questions. And that was surprising to me that there weren't more people who wanted to maybe ask Bruce Timm or George Perez a question. But at the same time, I also found it really cool that, you know, they could, you know, circle around again, you know, and maybe ask something else and stuff
that. It's a different, you know, set of rules, I think, for people who are artists, you know, versus the showrunners, you know, / creator things. Because, there was a near stampede for the Neil Gaiman Q&A section.
Really?
And and of course, you know, Joss Whedon, you know, that line's a mile long for just to, you know, get up and ask a question. The Neil Gaiman actually had one of the funnier bits, because he as everyone was sort of herding into the queue to the microphone, he said, okay, now, just so everyone's clear, a question is a sentence that ends in a question mark and needs a response other than, you know, I hadn't thought about it that way before.
Yeah, that's funny. He was kind of giving them guidelines.
Yeah, and it's really, it's nice to see, you know, people be reminded of that. Most people there, you know, obviously had pretty good questions that were prepared there. I've been there in the past where people have gone up and asked things that are, you know, somewhat inappropriate, or, you know, just didn't really have anything to do with what the person was there to promote, or, you know, and it's been uncomfortable at times, but
yeah,
there's been a lot less of that. I think people, again, the more nerds socialize, the better for all of us.
It was a really good time. I mean, I really think that it seems like Comic-Con this year, it's still big, don't get me wrong, but made like a couple of steps back to like, maybe it was the Twilight thing. Maybe, I mean, that to me would be astounding if that was the, that can't be the singular reason that things seemed a bit more chill, that the con was just overrun with Twilight fans for the past.
I feel like it may be a strong reason, because I do not see anywhere near sort of the level of rabid, you know, like screaming and like, you know, it's a different kind of fandom than I think most Twilight, than most Comic-Con goers were used to.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it did make a bit of a difference.
Huh. So then how could you manage that in the future? Because it just seems like,
you know, you can't predict that something's going to hit that big and in that way, you know, and believe me, if you could, you know, they would do their best to try to do that every year, you know?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
But, you know, there are some, obviously some really big things coming up. You know, they aired the pilot of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. there, and
yeah,
that got a really big response.
Yeah, people were freaking out.
You know, Doctor Who fans are, you know, equally,
yeah,
you know, rabid, yet so much more polite.
Yeah, it's true. And seemingly more intelligent, for lack of a better term. I'm like... run into the Doctor Who fans and they just seem so like happy and cordial, you know?
The writing's better. That might have something to do with it.
Yeah. But can you imagine, like, it's so funny because when I just happened to come across that first episode of the Christopher Eccleston series on Sci-Fi, like one Saturday afternoon, I was like, okay, this is kind of like quirky. Like, I'd never seen Doctor Who before. Like, I'd never seen it. I mean, I knew what it was, mm-hmm. but I was like, I felt like I was kind of getting in on the cult
ground, you know, floor, so to speak.
Yeah. Of something new, of something starting up, and it wasn't really popular, and now it's so huge, and you know, with what's his face, getting
David
ready
Tennant
to leave.
Really pushed it into something much larger than it was. And then when Matt Smith, you know, became the Doctor, like, whew.
Yeah.
It really blew up.
Well, that's the thing that really kind of ticked me off this week, is because I listened to the Nerdist show mm-hmm. from Comic-Con on their podcast, and they were just going on and on about Matt Smith, because Matt Smith was there, and they're like, oh, Matt Smith, you're the reason that it's become so big. And I was like, slow down a little bit. There was this dude named David Tennant who really built that show up for a long time, you know, along with Russell T. Davies, you know, who
right.
who really...
Well, you remember, we were there at WonderCon the year that they premiered the new Doctor Who with Smith, with
oh.
Matt Smith.
Were we at WonderCon, or was that Comic-Con?
Yeah, that was at WonderCon. We got to see the pilot before they aired it.
That's right.
You know, and you know, it we got into that panel. You know, we watched that. You know, we didn't have to line up for an hour beforehand either.
Yeah.
So I do believe that, you know, Matt Smith is definitely a big part of the popularity, but yeah. You know, a lot of it also has to do with the fact that Doctor Who hit Netflix now. You know,
yeah,
people are able to
true.
Catch up on the whole show, and the fact that BBC America is so much more accessible than it was, you know, when it first started out.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of reasons beyond Matt Smith, but you know, it's undeniable. He definitely has sort of pushed it into a sort of stratospheric level that it wasn't at before.
See, I don't know. I really feel like that. I feel. I mean, you know my feeling about the Matt Smith seasons, and I, to me, I feel much of it is, and not to take away anything from Matt Smith, because I actually do think he's a great doctor. I just think he's the writing hasn't been as consistent or as great since the Tennant years, but and that could just be me.
Never confuse popularity with quality.
That's true. That's true. But I really feel that Matt Smith rode a bit of a wave that David Tennant kind of and Russell T. Davies kind of created for him. I think the popularity of Who was cresting and was just about to break, and you know, David Tennant left and Matt Smith jumped on, and you know, the rest was history. So I think give Matt Smith his kudos. He definitely deserves it, but I don't see him as like, I don't see his era as like something incredibly, I mean, come on, like the end of the Tenant, like the last full season of Tenant, that was practically like Crisis of Infinite Earths, like, you know, with all the Daleks and the Cybermen and everything. So anyway, but yeah, I mean, it does seem like the Who crowd is the new sort of big cosplay thing.
Yeah, you know, because it's easy to put on a bow tie and you know, a suit, trench coat.
Well, we saw Dalek hats and
And the TARDIS is becoming sort of the new hot girl's costume.
Yeah, well, there was a little boy dressed as the TARDIS, which you can see.
Yeah, that was cute. That was really cute.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot fewer stormtroopers this year. I feel like that the Star Wars cosplay has died down quite a bit. But I'm sure it'll pick up once the new movies start coming out.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't notice a lot of Star Wars stuff, you know, but it could also be that I wasn't really looking, you know.
Dude, I'm telling you, it's going to be the calm before the storm.
So you think that once J.J. Abrams takes on Star Wars, that's going to be like the new Twilight for Comic-Con?
I don't know if it'll be the new Twilight, but I think you'll definitely see a resurgence in the popularity of the costuming. You'll see, you know, a lot more merchandising of it. I mean, as you know, don't get me wrong, there's still a ton of merchandising. It's sort of like, I think you're right about not paying attention to it in a way, because it's so ubiquitous that like it just becomes sort of part of the background there. But I think that you know, we're going to start to see a lot more of it, you know, once the new projects start rolling.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you seen any of the concept art for the new cartoon?
No, I didn't even know there was a new cartoon coming out.
Yeah, there's a new animated series that's going to be set between Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, and Star Wars, or Episode 4. It's called Rebels, and they've just released some concept art for it. Yeah, take a look. The concept art looks really nice.
Is it going to be CGI or?
You know, all they've released so far is like ship stuff, and you know, background stuff. So I can't really tell.
Oh, it's not even coming out till 2014. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, I guess it's going to be airing on Disney XD.
Oh, cool. Well, that makes sense.
It looks to me to be some of it. Well, it's just concept art, so it's drawn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it does seem to sort of bridge the gap. I'm seeing some like ship concept art, and you've got the classic TIE fighters, and that's really smart. That's very cool.
It's got a great little, you know, sort of storyboard sequence of a TIE fighter crashing into the ground on a planet. It looks nice. I think it's got an almost Ralph Bakshi quality to it.
Yeah,
it
does look old.
The coloring and lines.
Yeah, it does look old school for sure, which is kind of what I like about it. But I would imagine that it's going to be CG. That's really cool. I mean, it's so interesting that, I mean, there's a part of me that's actually kind of getting excited for Star Wars. But did you hear the rumor going around Comic-Con and, you know, apparently online that J.J. Abrams was thinking about dropping out?
Yeah, I'm not really putting any stock into it.
Yeah.
You know, because I haven't heard it from anyone you know, reputable.
Yeah.
You know, some of the other stuff I've heard tossed around, like I've heard that they were talking about Zac Efron as a role, and I was like, huh.
Oh.
And I was like, you know, because I only sort of knew him sort of as the, you know, teeny actor, whatever. But, you know, he's actually been quite good in a few things. And what was hilarious is I was rewatching an episode of Firefly, and he plays one of the characters on there as a young boy.
Oh, really?
And I'm just like, oh, like, look at that. Zac Efron's got, like, nerd credibility.
Yeah, but not that much nerd credibility. I think if they cast Zac Efron, you're looking at shooting that thing in the foot before it even gets out of the gate. I think there's a lot of people that, you know, I mean, however talented he is, myself included, who might be like, oh, no, don't do that. Cast somebody unknown. Or, I mean, I heard Ryan Gosling, you know, the rumors about Ryan Gosling. And mm-hmm. that, to me, I would be like, he's a great actor. He's got yeah. great presence. And absolutely, sign me up. I'll go see Ryan Gosling as Luke Skywalker's son. But once you talk Zac Efron, I don't know, man. I'm kind of out.
Dude.
You know?
Dude. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to say that he's quite talented, and he would probably surprise you.
You know what? Maybe he would. But I just think that his body of work precedes him and kind of would turn a lot of nerds off. But I think, you know,
if he was good enough for Joss Whedon, he's good enough for me.
One episode of Firefly, come on, man. But I mean, that's the thing, though, is Star Wars is so big that, you know, I mean, once those trailers or whatever start coming out, you know, I mean, we survived the prequels, right? So once those trailers start coming out, and if they look amazing, you know, maybe there'll just be a lot of people who'll be like, Zach, who? Just show me the lightsabers, you know? So I don't know. I would prefer they find an unknown, you know what I mean? I don't think they need a star, you know?
I agree, but yeah. You know, it's Hollywood. It never hurts to hedge your bets.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what other things did you see at Comic-Con? You set in on some filmmaking stuff, right?
Yeah, I went to Comic-Con's. What they do is every year do something that they call Film School 101.
Yeah,
it's really nice. It's they have a bunch of indie filmmakers there as a panel, and they have a moderator host who will give you sort of their insights into how to make a movie, how to secure your locations. You know, they'll talk a little bit about working with actors, how to make sure, you know, things are running smoothly. You know, it's definitely geared toward people who have never made a movie before.
Yeah.
You know, so some, if you've made a few, or you know, have any sort of interest already in filmmaking, it's probably going to be pretty remedial yeah. for you. But, you know, the people are really entertaining. You get some good stories out of it. And, you know, if you stick around afterwards, they have what's called the Comic-Con Film Festival, where I understand that there's like a jury award thing. I didn't stick around for the awards or anything, but I watched a really amazing movie called Somnius.
Oh, yeah.
That's by a first-time filmmaker named Denver Jackson, who put together a really, really entertaining, creative movie, loads of effects, and, you know, he pretty much is a one-man band here. You know, he has his team, but He made a very interesting story, and he told it well. And my understanding is now that he's going to be working on the Amulet movie.
Oh, wow, that's great! And I guess that's still in production.
Yeah,
I actually know the guy who created Amulet. I interviewed him for Ain't It Cool a long time ago, mm-hmm. and I ran into him at the convention center. I'm going to see if I can get him on the podcast for, you know, an interview. But I was interviewing him as he was going to sign that deal.
Oh, wow.
I guess with Will Smith's production company. Yeah, he's a really super, super nice guy, totally, and incredibly talented. It'll be interesting to see how they pull that off, because I think by the time it goes into production, I think Will Smith purchased the rights for his kids, you know, and his kids might be too old by that time.
Well, I don't know whether it's going to be entirely live action or if it'll be animated or what.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know either, but that's great. So dreams do come true at Comic-Con.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's every year it's a different experience.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely different. And the one thing to know at Comic-Con, and the one thing that I kind of relearned, you know, because I was kind of walking around, you know, asking people for interviews. I had the recording equipment. Everyone's kind of into their own thing at Comic-Con. They're trying to sell their own thing, make their own deal, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I got a chance to sit with Doug Sned, you know, and I put that interview up. But after that sort of experience, not that it was a bad experience, you start realizing that there's a lot going on, and there's a lot of big media outlets out there that are trying to grab everyone's attention. So, but I was able to hand out, you know, business cards. And I think the biggest thing that people need to learn, whether it's like trying to show a portfolio or, you know, get people on their sort of, you know, dinky little podcast is to, you know, just be polite. And for the most part, everyone just seems really open to what you're trying to show them, as long as you're being, again, courteous and actually, you know, seem like you have your stuff together. So, but yep. Yeah. And what about swag? You didn't really get a lot of swag, did you?
No, I didn't. I didn't get a whole lot of swag.
You bought something for
year.
Someone else.
Oh, yeah, I bought my wife a Zombies, Plants vs. Zombies, little plant stuffed animal thingy,
yeah.
Because, you know, that's her favorite game.
Yeah.
I got one of this is the first year I've ever bought a con-exclusive toy.
Yeah?
Yeah, this is the year that I ventured into you know, con exclusives. Friend knew I was going. He asked me, hey, if it's not too much trouble, could you pick up this Hasbro? It's a Transformers G.I. Joe thing. I honestly don't know what it really is, but I said, oh, yeah, you know, I know that con exclusives can be really hard to obtain, but I'll give it a shot. And as it turns out, this one was not difficult to get. They had produced enough of it to, you know, keep the fans happy. I know that that's not always the case, you know, and a lot of times these things sell out almost instantly, only to turn up, you know, at the booths, you know, sold for like a, you know, a markup of like 200% or something like that.
Or on eBay, yeah.
Exactly, or on eBay. And, you know, I didn't have that experience at all. I was able to walk up to the Hasbro booth and, you know, pick it up, and it was no problem. The only problem was, you know, again, hauling it around the convention floor, because those things are not small.
Yeah, yeah. That thing was pretty big, but it was pretty cool too. From what I remember, it was like a Transformers plane, and it was like a G.I. Joe Jeep thing. And it had like it included like a couple of different action figures, but it had the Baroness in it, which is like, if you're gonna get an action figure, that's one of the ones you want.
I guess so.
But yeah, I mean, I like, for me honestly, like Comic-Con, and this is kind of one of the reasons I kind of do get down a little bit after I go, is I spend way too much money on comics when I'm there. I just like, after I leave, there's definitely a little bit of a post Comic-Con depression, because I was like, I wasn't gonna spend that much money, and then I did. But this year the deals were like insane. Like, you could not forget about Sunday. Just like every day there were like omnibus editions, which usually sell for like $100-$120. You had dealers selling them for $30-$35. That was like insane. So I bought like a Captain America omnibus and you know, a couple of other Marvel things that I hadn't been able to catch up on. And it's just like, I could not pass stuff up. And then, you know, obviously there was a couple of creator-owned things that I picked up. And,
yeah,
you know, when the creator's standing there and you enjoy the creator, it's like, screw it, I'm just going to buy it from you, like yeah. right here and right now. So, which I believe we said in last year's podcast. But yeah, again, it's like I did splurge on my kid. I bought, she had the Phone Bone plush from Jeff Smith's Bone. So I got her Smiley and Phony Bone, which she absolutely loved when I got home. And you know, again, like the half off graphic novels, you know, yeah. or there were booths like selling a lot of the Boom Kids stuff, like right. Monsters Inc. and The Incredibles for like $4 for $10, and it was like, okay, I guess my kid's gonna be happy when I get home, you know. So it is a good place to get deals too, like yes. at least this year was, compared to like the last couple of years, for sure. I couldn't believe some of some of the prices were for some of the stuff.
Let's talk about the year that we both took a step toward cosplay.
Oh yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, you go first, because you got a lot of compliments on yours.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I went to the California Browncoats, who are the Firefly / Serenity fan club.
Uh-huh.
You know, at least the local California edition. And I don't know if you knew about the controversy surrounding the hat.
Well, is it the people who were like the licensed people and versus
yeah,
the homemade?
Yeah.
You told me about it.
Evidently, they're... You know, there's a hat. There's a funny knit hat that figures into the series Firefly. One of the characters, Jane, played by Adam Baldwin, gets a hat that's knit for him by his mom, and it's this goofy-looking wool hat. You know, it's hand knit. It's ridiculous, and part of what's appealing about it is the fact that he's like this huge, gruff mercenary guy, and he's wearing this ridiculous hat. I wanted one of the ridiculous hats. But apparently this year there have been people who would create this hat, you know, because it's just a, you know, sort of a knit hat with a particular design on it, started getting, I guess, takedown notices on Etsy by, I don't know who, Fox, I guess?
Yeah.
Would be the licensor for that, because they wanted to do an officially licensed version of the hat. And you know, so evidently there was a really big controversy around the hat, and I wanted a handmade one. I wanted specifically to have a handmade one, because
the fan made one.
Exactly, it's made with love. And,
yes.
You know, the other one, you know, is probably put together better. You know, but you know, this one was made by some lady, you know, who, you know, watched the show and, you know, figured out the pattern by herself, or, you know, I mean, come on, it's supposed to look handmade. I want one that looks handmade.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't want one that's put together by 9-year-olds in, you know, where I know I'm making baseless accusations now,
but it's true, probably very true.
But anyway, yeah, I went and picked out one of these hats, and, you know, wore it the whole convention because I'm a bald man and it keeps my head warm.
Yeah.
And everyone loved this hat.
Yeah.
People just kept telling me how much they loved the hat and were complimenting them. I'm just like, have you seen that there are like 500 other people here wearing the same hat?
Yeah. Well, you guys were, it was interesting because we would be like, remember, we at one point we were walking through downtown, you know, at night, and we were walking past this party of like drunk people, and a couple of people saw your hat and they were kind of giggling, and then one woman out of nowhere is like, your hat is awesome, shiny, it's shiny. And I was like, that's awesome, like that. You got,
well, I still wear it around here. And like the other day, we were going to visit our in-laws, and there was this pack of bicyclists on their way. You know, they do a tour all through the foothills and everything like that, and as they're coming by, this guy yells out, that's a cunning hat, shiny.
That's awesome.
I'm getting shout outs like on the street, you know, from people on this hat, even, and we're not at Comic-Con.
The power of Firefly.
So yes, I took a step toward cosplay this year because, I mean, it's just a hat, but I see the appeal. The appeal is that, you know, that you get the attention and you're part of the tribe, you know.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, I guess you did have that experience. I mean,
you took it further than I did.
I did take it further than you did, but mine is more obscure. Nobody's gonna know. Nobody's gonna know my cosplay because it's such an obscure. Basically, I got another tattoo while I was down in San Diego. I'd always kind of wanted to get a second tattoo. I have one on my shoulder that I designed myself when I was 19, and got that done when I turned 20. You know, to mark my passage out of my teen years, and then I'd always wanted a tattoo of the Star Brand, which for a lot of people out there who don't know what the Star Brand is, it was basically part of this project called the New Universe, which Marvel tried to launch, I think, in like 84 or 86 on the 25th anniversary of Marvel Comics. So it'd probably have to be like, gosh, was it the 25th? I can't remember. But anyway, Jim Shooter started this line of comics, and the Star Brand was one of them. And the New Universe line was a complete failure.
Awesome failure.
Yeah. But around issue 12 of the Star Brand, one of my favorite writer artists at the time, John Byrne, took it over, and he took that series out with a bang, and it just blew my mind. And I just always liked the concept of, for anyone who doesn't know the concept of Star Brand, it's, this guy gets a tattoo, which gives him superpowers. It's given to him by aliens. And what ends up happening is there's all these revelations during the end of the series that reveal the origins of where the brand comes from, and just blew my mind when I first read it. And so I'd always wanted that, and I'd kind of been like looking out of the corner of my eye at tattoo parlors in downtown San Diego. And Sunday afternoon, while you were at the Neil Gaiman panel, I just walked around and I found this place called Tiger Jimmy's, which had come recommended from another tattoo place that was booked up for the day, that had gotten really good reviews on Yelp. And I went in, and Tiger Jimmy himself gave me the tattoo, and he did an awesome job. So I have the Star Brand on my right arm now as we speak. So it's kind of like permanent cosplay.
That's right.
Yeah. So I'm a cosplayer at any convention I go to because I have the Star Brand on my arm.
And so the real question is, how are the accompanying superpowers?
They're kind of lame. Basically, I can read stories to children in funny voices. That's the only power that the Star Brand is giving me.
Dude, that's the only power you need.
I guess so, when you've got a six-year-old. Yeah, but I mean, I did that, and I was really happy with it, and I'm very happy with it. So I would definitely recommend Tiger Jimmy's in downtown San Diego. The guy did a great job.
There you
job.
Go. No other comics podcast is going to tell you the best place to get a tattoo at Comic-Con.
Yeah, which is weird because I talked to the guy for a long... He was great. He talked to me for a long time and asked me, you know, he talked to me about his life. I talked to him about my life. And, you know, and I was like, how many... Do you get busy during Comic-Con? And he's like, not really. He's like, maybe like one or two, like during the weekend, like come in for Comic-Con, but he's like, we don't really. And I was like, really? Because I would imagine that people would want to get tattoos, like, you know, of superhero stuff. But
there's a lot of freaking ink going on there too at the,
yeah,
know, if you're looking at the people around Comic-Con, I guess they just don't ever get it done during Comic-Con.
Yeah, no, which I did. Well, that was sort of the thing too, is, I mean, between you and me, as much as I love Comic-Con, I'm always like, this is going to be my last year. And this year I definitely felt like, well, maybe next year I'll take a break. But I've also got a bunch of friends who are like, they want to go for the first time next year. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe I'll go again, you know. Every time I think I'm out, it just sucks me back in.
You know? Nice Pacino.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I don't think I can ever really pull away from Comic-Con. You know, I don't think I'll ever be able to do that. It's just too much fun and too crazy, you know? So,
yeah.
I don't know. And it's a good time. I mean, and luckily, you know, for me, it hasn't been that hard to get tickets the past several years. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll keep going. Just a pain in the ass is getting the hotel. Jesus. Yep. Talk about a pain. But I guess, you know, got to make your reservations early. Any other last thoughts about this year's Comic-Con, Paul?
No, I just had a great time, and hopefully, you know, I'll do it again.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. Or, you know, we'll hit other cons, and hopefully we'll have wrangled up some neat interviews or people to talk to from this year's con, too.
Absolutely.
I'm going to do that. Anyway, this has been the San Diego Comic-Con wrap-up episode for 2013. Thanks for joining us. I'm Christian Horn, and that's Paul Edwards. And please check in with us next week, where we'll hopefully have another brand new podcast for anyone listening. Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Part-time fanboy. Part-time. Part-time fanboy.com.